You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Bit of a change of direction now, being the second Wednesday of the month between 1 and 2. We have our friends in from Hutchinson Legal. We've got the big boss, Grant Hutchinson, and we've got Simran in. Welcome, you two.
G'day. It's always good to see you, Alan. Sorry, there was a gap there.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to just nod your head.
one of those sessions, a non-verbal, Marcel Marceau session.
Hi, Alan. Good to see you again.
Good to see you too. Now, here's a great opportunity. Grant's brought in some prizes. So the first three people to ring Greg on 59615991. 59615991. Grant tells me they're great prizes.
Yeah, so that's a long number. What was that again?
59615991.
Oh, I tell you what, I'd be reaching for my phone now and calling in because the prize is it's a notepad, and I'm going to leave this with you, Alan, so you get your own. might bring one for Greg next time, but because this is for anyone who's contemplating committing a crime.
No, we're not contemplating that.
Oh, no. Anyone who might be involved in a court matter.
Right.
And you never know. Things can happen even though you're not expecting it. It could be that you're speeding up at the wrong time.
Now.
But let me finish. This is a book that's called Notes from My Lawyer. You don't have to come to Hutchinson Legal. It has got our branding on it, but it's a hardback, and it's got some information at the beginning about what legal professional privilege is, and notes that are prepared for your lawyer for the purpose of getting legal advice are protected by legal professional privilege. And it's, so if you make your notes in there, if a copper comes, sorry, if a member of a member of the our respected and esteemed police force comes, they should not read what's in there. But if you have notes lying around, they're entitled to, as part of a search warrant, take it, but they should never go into something like that.
Should they?
If they do, they knowingly might be infringing your legal professional privilege. Hence, we've come up with this book. It's something that we've copyrighted,
yep,
and it's something which we think is a great service. You don't have to use our services, but it's a great book to have, or you might know someone who... Someone's calling in already.
All right.
Great. And there's also some sweets to go with it.
All right, just hang on half a tick. Greg's going to answer phone out there, so hurry up. The first three people get these prizes. So
thanks for that, Alan. But tell me, I just wanted to talk to you about something.
No, I want to talk to you first, because we do have... whoever was just on the phone, ring back, please. Greg just couldn't get the phone quick enough. 59615991. You want to be quick to get one of these
three
prizes.
What was that number again?
59615991. Now, you're not going to put me off here, so please ring back.
It's almost a tune to your number. It's always you do it, like you're singing it.
Anyway... there's three prizes out there. I think you said there's something else as well to go with them. So
some sweets. So give them to your non-diabetic friends.
If you don't hurry up and ring, Greg might eat them. So you better give us a ring pretty well straight away.
Okay.
And he's there. No, we've had a question a couple of months ago, and we omitted to get the answer last month. We're coming in to Healesville. It doesn't matter where it is. We're in an 80 zone. There's a 60 zone. Where does the 60 come in? Is there an imaginary line across those two, between those two signposts? Could you get technically done if you're still doing 75, if you've got a metre over it? That's what the
question
was.
Absolutely. If you're a metre over, you're a lawbreaker. You're somebody who's... you don't push the line. You know, as Johnny Cash said, you walk the line. You don't right, speed over the line. So you would not want to be... if you've got good eyesight and can see it, 300 metres away, good on you. But the limit starts where the limit starts. And by the time you get to that sign, you need to be down. Now, there is... And please, this is not legal advice. This is something...
Yeah, I'm worried about this.
No. But I know I've seen... When I was in the Northern Territory... a copper explained it. Sorry, a member of the esteemed police establishment,
yep,
explained to me. There's the first sign that you see, and the second sign. And by the time you get to the second sign, they'll definitely book you. But the first sign, they may not. But the law is, you get to the first sign, you know, you're a millisecond, millimeter over, and you're going faster than 60, you've technically committed a crime. In fact, you should be slowing down beforehand.
Yep. Well, you really should slow. Is, I mean, if it's going from 60 to from 80 to 60, that's probably not quite so bad. But particularly if you've got to go from 80 to 60, which is what happens in the country.
And there is, you need sometimes to come there are not two signs. Sometimes they just have the one.
Yeah.
And they will, so they, you know, you can't count on a second sign. You need to be ready for the first sign. Because, and look, that's given as practical advice and maybe the most impractical advice.
I should play a disclaimer.
But we've already played the disclaimer. I think if you really got caught in this situation, remember, a policeman's just trying to do his or her job.
Yep.
And did I say policeman? A police person is just seeking to do his or her job. And they want to make sure that you're safe. The road rules are driven around public safety, as which includes driver's safety. They've, for some reason, they've determined that we need a lower speed limit in a certain area, particularly around schools at certain times. You'd never want to muck up around there because they don't even give the 3 kilometre allowance.
No.
So for those...
And I remember talking to a policeman, this is years ago, because they used... Well, I should mention those couple of prizes are still waiting here. So 59615991 or Greg will get them and he'll eat them, so you better hurry up. But there's also this great book.
Well, and you've got to come in and collect those. So if you can't come in, Alan will take them home with you.
I remember talking to a policeman when they brought... I mean, that the 5 kilometres was sort of unspoken. They brought it down to 3.
Yeah,
well, but they used to have 5, and then they became known it was going to come down to 3. And I remember talking to a policeman saying, oh, you know, that's a bit rough. And he said, mate, if you knew the amount of times I've done the death knock, which is where the police have to knock on a door and say, and he said, as we're driving there, we know they're... They will never be the same.
Yeah.
Because we've got to tell them their husband, their wife, their child, one of their loved ones is not coming home ever again. And he said, it's shattering to us. And he said, if I could book you at 100.1, I'd book you. Because if I can save one life and save one death knock, so he said, I'll book anybody that's even a little bit over.
And remember, if you're on red P plates or if you're on certain plates, there's certain further requirements, and the idea is to wipe off 5 if you can. It's particularly, it's really, if you can, there's a book called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. Stop it.
Ruthless
Elimination of hurry. And they actually, in the title, they put a line through the word hurry, and it's by an author who's trying to say, look, there's some things he says that I disagree with, but the idea is just breathe. You know, take time to smell the roses. I don't think he uses those examples. I think he goes too far. He says, if you walk in and there's 2 lines and one's longer than the other, join the long line. Relax. I couldn't quite bring myself.
I'm not sure I could cope with that.
No, I couldn't cope with that either. But the idea is just live and just... let live and settle down. Would you agree with that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Smelling the roses along the way is so very important.
All right. Okay. We've got to take a break. We've talked too long on that because we did send you away with a question last time about facial recognition. So we want to take that, but we'll just take this quick break.
You were young. We'll be right back.
live and let die.
Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And we just do still have a couple of those presents left, so 59615991. Greg's out there with he's got his pen poised, he's all ready to go, so give us a yell and you'll get a prize. Now, we had a query last time from somebody about, we're talking about this facial recognition where you walk in a store and you don't know, or maybe that they're actually somehow they've got a they take a facial, a camera picks up your face, yeah, and then it checks whether you've been a shoplifter, yeah, or whether you've done something wrong. So first of all, what sort of signs do they have to put up? Secondly, if they're checking against the fact that you've been a shoplifter, so therefore that means there has to be a database somewhere. Who owns that database? And how do you make sure that you're not on that database when you shouldn't? Because accidents do happen.
Now, before Simran comes to the real answer, can I give you just some anecdotal stuff? Every organisation should have their own privacy policy.
Yep.
Now, if the privacy policy provides that they respect people's facial recognition, they're collecting it and they will destroy it after 3 months or whatever, that'll be in their privacy policy, and they should abide by any privacy policy they have. But I know a little, I've seen a few shops, some in the country, some even one in a little bit closer to home here, where somebody has obviously charged people for shoplifting, and from then on they have a photo of them and they stick it up there. And
yeah, I've seen that.
I've seen that, and that's pretty, that's, I wouldn't say that's respecting people's privacy, but it's saying hopefully they've got a conviction before they do that, not just something went missing around the time that they were in. That would be terrible if they were doing that. But anyway, let's get to the real answer, and then I'll give you a website that where you might be able to look at law reforms in the area, because it's not quite, I'd call, a settled area. But over to you, Simran.
That's right, Grant and Alan. Thanks for the question. It's such an interesting topic. And interestingly, facial recognition is still a relatively new concept, and no specific laws in Australia dedicated to facial recognition technology. But this, the use has been governed is governed by existing privacy and surveillance laws, and especially the Privacy Act of 1988, which is a federal legislation that, and how it it takes care is like it requires businesses to handle personal information, which includes the biometric data. Now, I understand biometric data includes your facial recognition as well, and in accordance with the Australian privacy principles. So that's called APPs. So there are 13 APPs in the legislation, and that's how it's regulated, how personal information is collected, used, disclosed, and stored. So with respect to the APPs, what's interesting is the businesses that have an annual turnover of $3 million and less, it's not an APP entity, so it's, it doesn't apply to that.
So there's no rules, is that what you're saying?
So if the business has an annual turnover of $3 million and less, or less than $3 million rather, dollars, then it's not an APP entity, and then it's not the it's not applicable. Those rules are not applicable to those businesses. But there are lots of reforms that are being suggested in this space because of obvious reasons, with the digital technologies gaining such insights, and people are obviously concerned about these things. So there are reforms being introduced, and in principle there is agreement by the government after there was a Commonwealth government report. There was a Privacy Act review report, and the Commonwealth government in September 2023 provided the response saying there's in principle agreement that all businesses, regardless of their annual turnover, would be required to comply with the Privacy Act.
Right.
I think Grant would give more details about what's happening in the space.
We're still not actually covering the question, though. The question is what sort of signs do they have to put up, how big are do they have to be, and where do they have to be in the shop? Do they have to be the miniature walk in the shop, or can they just hide them down the back in some little corner? No one knows that they're there.
So, since there is absence of clear dedicated laws for facial recognition,
right,
there's best practice. Right. And the signs should be displayed, should be clear. There should be prominent signs at the store entrances informing customers about the use of the facial recognition technology.
Right.
And they should provide detailed information about how their data is, people's data is being collected, used and stored.
Right.
And also offer customers a way to opt out or to withdraw consent and ensure that they are complying with the Australian privacy principles.
Right. So, all right, we still need to move this along. So they come in and they take someone's photo, or I don't know whether it's a photo or whether it just flashes up on a screen somewhere. But then there must be a database somewhere for people to know that this person's been a shoplifter. So where's that database? And how do people know whether they're on it or not?
So that's what. It might be stored in a cloud somewhere. So it's not very clear as to the legislation. As I said, this area is still very in the development phase. And there's a lot more rigorous laws that are required. So this is not very clear in the current legislation.
So, well, say all the big, I don't want to use names, but if you've shoplifted in Joe Blow's shop, obviously that shows up somewhere, because otherwise this facial recognition would never work. It's not just that you've done something in that shop.
No, sorry. Back up a bit, Alan.
Yep.
You're getting fixated with shoplifters. I know you don't like. I know you have a personal dislike, or maybe it's an aversion to something. You might be over masking what you get up to. But anyway, let's not go there. Don't worry. The bigger problem is somebody's never shoplifted. Why should your facial recognition be up and people be able to keep that information? Because that's the privacy that should be addressed by government. Because we have the technology, we'll often find that laws can be years behind.
That's right.
And in the meantime, it's a wild, wild west where everybody's doing everything and it's terrible.
That's the point that we're trying to make, they're collecting this information, and where's it going?
Well, and that's the wild, wild west that we're in. So there's some regulation, and certainly it shouldn't be used, against you. It's not so much there's a database of shoplifters. There's a database of everybody that's going shopping, so when you go to big shopping centres, they've got lots of. Can I tell you, they told me, and I won't say which shopping centre, because they tried to get me to move into one of them and have my shop front there. They said, Grant, we'll be able to tell you where they went, and if they picked up something and looked at it, we can send them an SMS before they leave, discount 20% off that black jumper. They don't say it this way. They know so much information, and they already have it. They're already tracking and datering, and because then they can find out about your mobile phone. Because when they say free Wi-Fi, never go on it.
Oh, no, you never want to use
remember,
that.
Remember, if it's free, you are the product.
Yep.
If you're paying, what you're paying for is the product. Otherwise, anything for free, beware. But you walk into that zone and they've got lots of information. Now, I'm not trying to put you off going, but talk to Aaron Violi. He's your local MP.
Yep.
He's in federal parliament, and there's a bill before the House of Reps at the moment dealing with the next tranche of privacy and how it should be, and there'll be further tranches further bills before.
Yep.
So it's not law yet, but there's further material going on, and you want him to get behind. He's a very clever guy. He knows his
way. But not talked about this.
Well, he knows about information technology and what's going on in this space. He's a clever guy, and you want to he's there to work for you. So tell him what you think, and because sometimes there's a time to enjoy the wild, wild west, and sometimes it's time to pull it in.
All right, Grant, so just let me ask you this. So we'll go back to this, well, not hypothetical, but what happened to you, where they said that this, you know, they can tell you what they buy and all that sort of stuff. How long do they keep that information, and what happens to it?
Well, the question would be, if there's nothing to require them to get rid of it, why would they get rid of it? Because then next time you come in...
Well, I guess that's what I'm asking. Is there a law that tells them they have to get rid of it?
So currently with the Law Institute, they've told us it's going to be... Forget about facial recognition for a moment. When you go to your lawyer, you expect your lawyer to keep records, because quite often we get a call 15, 25 years later. In fact, I had one the other day from the 1960s. Can you give me access to... I said, dear, I said, love,
Magda.
I said, look, we'll do what we can. And I found something from the 2001, and I was able... But we only have to keep it for 7 years.
7 years, yeah.
But if it's a will file, then you'd normally keep it longer, because until the dispute, you know, because you'd want to have it in case there's a dispute over a will, so what was actually the file note. So we generally keep those files indefinitely until we know they're dead, buried, cremated or whatever, and the will's been administered. So the Law Institute said to us now, we will consider it professional misconduct if you have kept something, if after 2 years after the time you should have, you can destroy it, you haven't destroyed it, because now all our stuff is kept in the
cloud.
Somewhere. Yep. So, and if somebody hacks in and gets all this stuff, you don't want it now. So we like people to come and pick up their stuff if we've got a hard copy.
Right.
But so much, we're paper light. In fact, how much paper do you generate a day if it's not because I've asked you to copy it? Not that you would do that, but somebody would. It's not... what do you reckon about... used to be a lawyer would chop down a tree a day... so to speak, but now you'd say...
We're still using a lot of paper, but our best practice is not to.
So we scan it, we hold it there, and we get rid of the physical file, as much as we can. So they're saying that can be hacked, that can be got into, so you have a responsibility to your client not to keep it. It used to be you had a responsibility to keep it, now it's professional misconduct.
You're saying anything over 7 years, it would be professional misconduct?
Lawyers are never that black and white. So you must keep it for 7 years.
Yep.
Every 2 years after 7 years, you should review why you need to keep it. So will files, you keep it. So you'd have to turn your mind to, why am I keeping this? And if you just keep everything without reviewing it, so you need to conduct a review. So then you can say, well, I need to because it's a property transaction. There'll be questions about capital gains tax or something. I don't know. But the idea would be to try to give things back to the client, empower the client to have, and then if they don't keep it... you know what it's like. When I was a young lad, microfiche was a good way to keep
things. Yeah, it was. I remember that.
There was such a thing as a fax machine.
Yeah, there was.
We still have a fax machine because some doctors like to send us things.
Yeah, doctors still use it.
Anyway, let's not go there. Then we have to scan it and put it on the file. Anyway, look, so there's... But I will give you a website, so you can go to the Attorney General's website, which is Media Centre at the... Media Centre.
Yeah.
And so Google Attorney General Australia, Media Centre, privacy, and hopefully it'll take you... That's what we were told. On the way here, we called their office, and they were very helpful. Yep. This is Attorney General Mark Dreyfus's office, and they did the best. But if you get stuck, look, sometimes there's state laws. There's Cindy McLeish. Yep. I know she's trying to get a bridge that's currently closed.
We've been talking to Cindy about that a lot. She jumps in every month.
She's great. Okay, all the best.
I've got to take a break. But we still don't know where that database is going to be held. Or where that information is held.
You track that down. This is like the X-Files. It's out there somewhere.
Is he coming in? Doing that thing.
listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Well, I'm talking to Grant and Simran from Hutchison Legal. Simran, you've got a case that covers a bit of what we've been talking about.
That's right, Alan. So this is from the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner's determination. So this happened in late 2021, and this was a major retailer who collected sensitive information in breach of the Australian privacy principles. And what happened was the determination by the commissioner was that the collection was not reasonably necessary for its functions and activities, and that retailer had not obtained valid consent. So also said that it did not take reasonable steps to notify individuals about the facts and circumstances of collection or the purpose of collecting their facial images and face prints through the customer feedback mechanism. Now, this was a breach of the Australian Privacy Principles 5.1 and 3, and that retailer was ordered that all those face prints were to be destroyed.
Even the shoplifters.
Everything was to be destroyed.
No, you're free now, Alan. Don't you worry.
Stop me.
Interestingly,
I know it's not you, Alan. I would never defame you.
No.
I know you're a good bloke. Despite what you did as a young man.
I don't ever want to get into court. I've never been there. I don't want to go.
I agree with you. It's a horrible place. Keep going.
All right. Interestingly, in April 23, the same retailer voluntarily notified the commissioner that 54 of their stores had inadvertently re-enabled the facial technology. And
inadvertently. How do you do that inadvertently?
but they said that once they have identified it, they had promptly deactivated it, and the commissioner was satisfied that the reactivation was entirely inadvertent. And the commissioner appreciated that and then said that's a principle of good governance that was practiced and that was fine.
So no penalty?
No penalty.
So that's voluntary disclosure if you've done it.
Yeah. The way to go. Oh, look, I've got to take a quick break and then I'm going to come back because we've got a real good question for next time and then we're going to talk about superannuation.
Trace.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
We're talking to Grant and Simran from Hutchinson Legal. Right, we've had a question from one of the listeners, and I must mention too, we still got a couple of prizes if you want to ring 59615991. Otherwise, Greg will have used them up by the time you give us a ring. Now, this is about, we're talking about mobile phones, and we know you're not allowed to pick them up when you're driving. And even when you pick up an intersection, you're not allowed to pick up
absolutely
your mobile phone.
Right. Yep.
Not allowed to touch them. All right.
And that's an expensive fine too.
So you pull up at a set of lights. Now, Grant's got a lot more money than I have, so he's probably got a better one than me.
Simran's got more than both of us.
But my watch, my texts go to the watch and my emails come to the watch.
Yeah, right? You should take your watch off.
Well, somebody has raised the question.
Oh, sorry. We'll answer it next time. Yeah, we'll keep you in suspense.
But somebody has raised the question. You pull up at the lights and you look at your clock. And you look at your watch because you want to know the time. And I do this quite often.
Do you?
So
stop.
Well, let's. We want you to have a look at the
total elimination of the ruthless elimination. Harry, don't worry about the time. Just when you get there, you get there.
We want you to look at the law because this person may have been, I suspect.
So you don't want a philosophical response, you want a legal response.
That's right.
I'm better at philosophy.
No, we don't want to. We want the legal advice as to what the law is because may or may not, and I don't know, they didn't tell me.
You're quite earnest. It's the importance of being earnest. We'll get back to you on it. We've got the question.
Listen,
what's next?
You're making it awfully hard.
Relax.
We want to know what the law is.
Yeah, I know.
Because
and we'll keep you in suspense until. Do you know how to keep
month.
A DAG in suspense?
But what's the difference?
I'll tell you tomorrow.
What? Take him home, will you? So, but what we need to know is what the law is, because how would you protect yourself if you're going to have a look at the time, and some Mr. Policeman decides that he thinks. That
stop,
you've read
stop
read
being
the text.
Such a misogynist. It
anyway,
can be,
let's
can
get
be a
off
female
it.
Police officer. Just call police officer.
I'm sorry I deleted that.
open Studio 2024, the Yarra Valley, 12th and 13th of October, and also the 26th and 27th of October. It's a great exhibition. Everybody should want to get along. If you want more details, call Greg and he'll give you a prize and details about this.
Sounds good.
Anything else you want to talk about?
No, we want to talk to Simran.
About Super.
She wants to talk about Super Annuation.
Super Simran. Go for it, Simran.
All right. Super Annuation. Have you had your laugh? Then I can start.
You're not coming next month, are you, Greg?
No. I've been sacked.
Go,
all right, so superannuation, as you know, it's so popular and such a hot topic always because that's the biggest asset after, I would say, real estate, land, house that Australians hold. And and what are the laws relating to superannuation?
Yep.
Most people understand and think that super is their asset and they might want to dispose it off as they want or give it as they want, but that's now not how super works. So if I ask your listeners, would they know what happens to the super if they die?
Yep.
Does it come into the will? Like, does it go through the will or no? So
most would say that go into the will, but you're going to tell us what really happens.
It doesn't fall part of the estate unless you direct it to. So this is something which most people don't know. And that's why when we look at people who do post office wills or do-it-yourself wills, that's a problem. They're not getting that legal advice because when we give legal advice as to the whole estate planning, we're also covering your advice relating to your superannuation, which is such a major component of the assets that you hold.
So unless you actually mention it in your will, it's not part of your estate.
No, it is not.
Sure.
And it is, if you So then the next question that you might ask is, how do you give your super then?
Yeah.
If it doesn't form part of the estate and not coming into the will, then there's something called a binding death benefit nomination form, right, which every industrial retail fund has on its website, just somewhere hidden, and you'll need to go and search there, right, download that form, and then you do those nomination to the beneficiary. Now, again, you can't nominate anybody. There are strict rules around nomination, which are governed.
Does it have to be family or?
Yeah, so there are strict rules which are governed by the Superannuation Industry Supervision Act of 1993, called the SIS Act. So there need to be SIS dependents, and then only your nomination will be valid. So if, for example, you nominate your parents or somebody who's a single and wants to nominate his parents for his super, that and doesn't know about it and does a binding death benefit nomination and feels happy about it and I've done my nomination, but no, it's invalid.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and what happens if there's no form? Like, supposing it's not in the will, or it is in the will, and it's not in the will, and they haven't done that death binding.
Yeah.
Does it still not?
Got your question. So it's trustee discretion. So it depends on who the trustee thinks. So the trustee will ask who wants to come forward, next of kin,
yep,
or anybody who wants to make a claim, and then it totally depends on what the trustee thinks and determines. So if you want to make sure that the super goes to the right people and as per the SIS Act, then take legal advice and nominate the right people. If there is not a SIS dependent, then bring it into the will. And that's how...
We could do a whole program on this, Alan, and I can see how excited you are on the edge of your seat.
I'm amazed. I would have just assumed, and I'm not even sure what mine says, to be honest.
You're a reasonably intelligent person.
Thanks.
So what did you... but we can judge
it. After today, I'm not sure.
No, but if you didn't get it, if you didn't know,
yeah,
most listeners wouldn't know. And so this is something where you spend a couple of thousand, or you spend whatever you need to with getting proper advice, and you save, you get to achieve what you really want in a far better way. We were only talking on the way up, what happens to somebody who's... let's say you nominated your spouse,
yep,
and the police found you guilty of, not you, but a person of murdering their spouse. Could they still claim the money? And the common law is you can't benefit from killing,
yep,
somebody.
Yep.
So, but Simran's going to look into that to see whether how that runs, whether common law overrides the SIS Act, and or what's in there. It's a fascinating area, and particularly on the fringes, the more extreme things that could or couldn't happen. This is one, it's a minefield if you get it wrong, and it costs,
yeah,
if you nominate the wrong person who's not a dependent, there are tax treatments that may not fall into place. And also sometimes accountants in a proper thing will say the person themselves gets the best tax treatment. So sometimes we've had cases where somebody's, you know, got hours or days to live and they're suddenly wanting to withdraw their super so that you get the best possible tax treatment. So, look, Simran's nodding. Great for radio, by the way, Simran. so you just say yes. That's the best thing to say after. But Simran knows this area so much better than I do. Alan, it might be worth, not next month, but
yep,
when we... Simran's very busy, but we might record something and send it to you and you can play it.
Oh, well, I think we should, because I would have just assumed, and I'm not even sure that I've done anything about it. I just think that, well,
I would have thought
it just became part of your whole estate.
And you'll find that you probably were given a form called a binding beneficiary
binding
nomination.
Binding death benefit nomination form.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
when I was young, that's when you were young, Simran's still young. they used to have the non-binding and binding nomination of beneficiary forms. I think it's...
They still have that. So that's why we tell the clients, please be careful what you're signing. So sometimes they'll bring... And they said, we've already done it. And when I look at it, it says non-binding. And the other thing to note is the binding death benefit nomination lapses in 3 years, so you have to renew it.
Oh, does it?
That's another... Yes. So many times they don't even remember that they remember signing it at some point, but when you ask them when you did it, It might have been more than 3 years. It's already lapsed.
So I was going to say, if it was, say, 10 years later, so you really haven't got an agreement at all?
Yes. So that's when the trustee discretion comes into the picture. And that's what I said. And the other aspect which Grant was mentioning and very important is the tax implications of your beneficiaries getting it. So if you are cis-dependent, the nomination is valid, but it's not certain that you still get the tax benefit. So you have to be a tax dependent to get the tax benefit. Now, who are the tax dependents? And who are the cis dependents? So there are two various different categories.
Is there?
Yes. So cis dependent may be your spouse. Is your spouse, not maybe. Is your spouse a legal or a de facto partner or a same-sex partner? Then your children of all ages, maybe adopted children, even in some cases stepchildren.
Yeah.
Then the third category is if you are in an interdependent relationship with the deceased.
What's
and that can be proposed.
What's that? What's
so they are living in the same household. They are mutually dependent on each other.
Right.
So that needs some proof and evidence to be provided. And the fourth is if you have any kind of financial dependence on the deceased. So those four categories are cis-dependents. But out of these four categories, when the children are adult children, then they are not tax-dependent. So they don't get the tax benefit. Then they have to pay 15% plus 2% Medicare levy tax when they get the super death benefits as beneficiaries.
I'm conscious of the time.
I've got to go.
We got to go too. No offence, but we've got somewhere better to be.
Chuck,
take care.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for coming along, Grant and Simran.
And we'll talk to somebody next month.
We don't really have somewhere better to be. Bye.